Good morning. I'd like to apologize up front. I've had way too much coffee already, and so if I start jittering around, you know why. So for the next about 15 minutes or so, I'm going to possibly enlighten you as to, I think, an easy step-by-step process in terms of screening biochars. And I think the take-home message in this talk is that, you know, you don't have to use this necessarily for mylan reclamation, but you could use it for other systems as well. If you don't know, I'm following up Erica, and I actually jumped ship from ARS about 3 months ago, and now I work back at Colorado State University. And so this work's continuing through Colorado State. If you know anything about mineland soils are a heck of a lot of fun to work with. They're really challenging. They have both physical and literal signs that tell you or warn you of issues present on site, such as don't drink the water, don't bathe in it, don't get it on your skin. And if you look at some of these sites down in the bottom portion of this slide, we get some really unique colors that are natural but somewhat unnatural as well. And these waters basically feed into natural systems like you see in the bottom right-hand corner. And just to give you some facts about mine lands across the U.S., there's about 500,000 abandoned mine lands within the U.S. In the western U.S., there's 160,000 of those that are mapped or unmapped, of which about 33,000 have contaminated waters that are acidified that dump into more pristine bodies of water. And so the question is, what can we do about this? And if you've seen any of my talks in the past, I love talking about biochar, and I love talking about mine land reclamation, and I actually love combining both. And so I don't know if I did this last year or the year before, but this is a paper that's currently in review with JEQ. And the question we asked ourselves is, can we use biochar to effectively reclaim mine lands? And wow, it looked bigger on my computer. This is some work we did a number of years ago. This is about 4 or 5 years ago, and we finally concluded it, and it's, like I said, in review with JEQ. And what you're looking at here, and I'll describe this picture, it's lodgepole pine biochar, increasing application rates of lodgepole pine biochar, 0, 5, 10, 15% by weight. And that's on the x-axis. It was added to four different soils, so you see four different colored bars in each one of these graphs. And the graphs themselves from the left to the right are cadmium, copper, lead, and zinc concentrations. And the take-home message here is if you can't even see the graphs, if you look at the colors, they decrease as you increase biochar application. And there's a reason for that. Read the paper when it comes out. We also looked at tamarisk biochar. And the reason why we looked at both of these biochars, lodgepole pine in the western U.S. is a huge issue, right? Lodgepole pine kill from beetle kill. And tamarisk is actually an invasive species in the western U.S. Along waterways. And so these two plants are present in close proximity to mine lands, right? So to me, I like thinking practically. Let's use two of these products to sorb metals, which it does very well, and reduce the bioaccessibility. And so I got to tell you, when we started this project, I think we got really lucky. We kind of knew what we were doing, but with a little more thought, we could do a better job of screening biochars, and that's what I'm going to tell you today. That's the story for this morning. And so this is the thought process, and this is a process that we work through with the ARS, with EPA, and now with Colorado State University. And here's the, I think, simple thought process for screening biochars. And so what we're doing is what we have done is we've collected mine soil, and we've collected a library of biochars. We've taken the mine soil, and we've performed something called SPLP extraction. It's a synthetic precipitation leaching procedure. So we make fake precipitation, fake water, fake rainwater, if you want to call it that, and we leach it through the mine soil, and we collect the leachate. Then in step three, we react those libraries of biochar with that solution. We drop down to step four, where we separate the solution from the biochar. We dry the biochar. The solution we measure, actually, before we mix the biochar and the solution together, we measure the solution for metal content. We mix the biochars. We separate them after the fact, measure the amount of biochar or the amount of metal that's present in the solution after the fact. That's step number five. And so that gives us the amount of metals that are sorbed. Then we take that dried biochar and we said to ourselves, well, what happens if we have a biochar that does a very good job of sorbing metals, but it releases metals back into the environment? You would think that you would not want that to occur at a mine land site, right? That's counterproductive. So step six, we react that biochar that's laden with metals with a weak ionic strength solution. We analyze the solution after the fact for metals, and then we take the data from the first two steps, and we suggest which biochars are the best, quote best, and we take that forward, and we apply those at 0, 1, 2.5, and 5% by weight back to the original soil and look at metal sorption. And so that's what I'm going to tell you today. So we're working on two different mine sites. One's called the Tri-State Mining District. It's in southwestern Missouri. It's a very large site. If you're familiar with this site, it's laden with cadmium and zinc, mostly zinc. And we're currently in the process of screening these 26 biochars for metal sorption on this site. The other site that I'm going to focus on this morning is this site called Formosa Mine, the Formosa Mine site. It's in south central Oregon, and it's a lot of fun to work with if you love working with heavy metal contamination, because it's laden with cadmium, copper, and nickel, and zinc, and there's probably a few others in there, manganese, for example. And so we've taken 26 biochars, and we followed this procedure that you've seen on the previous slide and screened these biochars. And so this is what we did. The SPLP solution contained, hopefully this shocks a little bit, a few members in the audience, 59 parts per million cadmium, 260, 16, and 8,500 parts per million soluble zinc. There's a reason why plants aren't growing here. You probably can, you know, infer that from this data. So we reacted 0.25 grams to 25 mils of this solution, shook them for 24 hours, filtered through 0.45, analyzed the filtrate for heavy metals. The 26 biochars, I'm going to test you after this session is over, so you know if you can remember any of these biochars. You can see that they range, if you look at the feedstock, we'll just look at the feedstock. So they range from grasses to hardwoods and softwoods, Kentucky bluegrass screening, spent brewer's grains, and they were pyrolyzed or gasified at various temperatures. So what we're looking at here is different feedstocks, different pyrolysis temperatures, and trying to narrow this pool down to the best, if you will. And so here are the results. This is the first step after the synthetic precipitation leaching procedure that had been added to the biochars. And we're looking at cadmium. We're looking at cadmium, copper, nickel, and zinc. And when you look at this data, let's see, on the y-axis is the cadmium, copper, nickel, and zinc concentrations in solution. And on the x-axis are all these biochars. And the take-home message here is we're looking for the lowest bars, essentially, right? So which biochars retain the most metal, okay, sorb the most metal from solution? And so this gives us an indication, especially for copper and zinc, so we can start screening. You know, this is basically our initial screening. And we kept that in mind. And so what we did was we dried those biochars, and then we shook those for 24 hours in a weak ionic strength solution, filtered those through 0.45 membrane microfilter, and analyze the solution on the ICP. So the theme is very similar to the previous slide you had just seen. Cadmium in the top left, copper in the top right, nickel bottom left, zinc in the bottom right. And so we can look at this sort of data set and go, okay, now we can start taking a look at these biochars. Which biochars did a very good job of reducing metals, or retaining metals, I'm sorry. Is it working? Okay. Thanks. All right. And it looks like there's quite a few of them, right? So we take the first data set, and we take this set, and this is what we do. We choose the, quote, best biochars for metal sorption from those previous two steps. And we took all those biochars, and we added those back to the Formosa mine soil at those application rates by weight, and we observe changes in solution metal content. And this is what we see. I'm going to focus on copper, and I'm going to focus on zinc, because these are sort of the big players on site after the fact. And if you look at this graph, copper concentrations, and this is in the mixture itself, so milligrams per kilogram, versus all these different biochars. I don't expect you to know all these. The way this graph works is the A, B, and C on the x-axis correspond to 1, 2.5, and 5% by weight of that particular biochar. And then what I did was I separated the biochars with these vertical sort of bluish lines. Okay, so you can see how this actually has progressed over the shaking period. And you can compare this to the control, the soil alone, which is on the far right. And so if you draw a straight line across Most of these biochars, in fact, all these biochars did a really good job of sorbing copper. And the general theme is as you increase application rate, you increase copper sorption. Okay. For whatever reason. It's likely forming carbonates, hydroxides, or oxide phases based on some of the previous work that's actually currently in review with JEQ. We did the same thing with zinc. Again, the same general theme, zinc concentration on the Y, all the different biochars and their application rates on the X. The soil content is on the far right. And if you look at this now, the average concentration of zinc from the soil, now we can really do a good job of screening these biochars, correct? And so anything below the line would be something that would be desirable to be used on site. For example, dairy manure, miscanthus, or this special ARS wood that's it's magic, if you will. And so here are the conclusions. All right, I'm way ahead of schedule. Too much coffee this morning. So I think the beauty of this type of approach is that it's relatively simple. You can probably perform this over about a 2 to 3 week period in the laboratory, which is wonderful. There's no on-site mistakes made up front. So what we do is we screen in the laboratory. We make the mistakes, if you want to call them that, in the laboratory, and then take our ideas, our findings, to the next step, which would be the greenhouse, which is what we're doing currently, and then screen our biochars in the greenhouse, and then take that next logical step, taking the best or best, the set of best biochars to the field. And so with that, I'll conclude and take any questions. Thank you. So did everybody hear the question? Yeah. So we haven't gotten to that step yet, but I can tell you based on some of the previous work that we have done, as well as other biochar researchers, especially in, there's another paper that came out somewhere in Southeast Asia that dealt with heavy metal sorption onto different biochars. And the real workhorse that we see typically in our most common biochars is carbonates, oxides, and hydroxide phases. And so you need to be really looking at the ash content and what's present in the ash content of that char in terms of metal sorption.
Yes, sir. What was the increase in zinc
in application rate? As opposed to,
yeah, this
like this one here?
A couple of them, not more.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I haven't really thought about it. I've always focused on what's happening below that red line. I would assume that there's actually, I don't know. I mean, for example, maybe there was some zinc present in this product, but it doesn't make much sense for the sorghum product. Although those two points are identical based on the statistics there. Yeah, that's a good question. I'll have to think about that a little bit. No, that's a great question, Amir. The pH of that soil is acidic. Is it 2.1? Yeah, I mean, it is true heavy metal laden mineland soil. Zinc's highly available in that system. So, I mean, the concept is, and we've heard a little bit about this morning in the previous two talks about changing pH, you know, and its effect on various characteristics in the soil, including precipitation. And that's really what's driving zinc and copper complexation in the system. I know others have found, especially with copper, and it makes sense, we know copper forms strong associations with organic phases, and we can see copper sorption onto biochars on the organic portion of biochars if the biochars pyrolyze at a relatively low temperature. And that follows kind of a general theme that we're all familiar with. But in these cases, my gut feeling, based on my research and others, is that it's carbonates, oxides, and hydroxides that are doing the majority of the work. And so really the take-home message here is if you're interested in heavy metal sorption, you should be looking at the content of those phases in the biochar itself. It really has very little to do with the biochar and everything to do with the ash content.
Sorry.
That's a great question. You know, I would probably, and I don't deal in that realm at all. I'm more inorganic chemistry, but I would assume you could do something very similar. You know, you could take these biochars that have higher or lower exchange sites, cation exchange sites, or surface areas, and look at sorption of those products as well. And I think the assay would be relatively straightforward. It would be simple to follow a system just like we presented here.